that is also known, is coming up later this week. I thought it'd be appropriate to talk about the origins of All Hallows Eve. Halloween is actually a contraction of Hallows Even or Hallows Evening, also known as All Hallows. Oh, did you turn me on, Bill?
I turned you on.
Okay. Also known as All Halloween, All Hallows Eve, and All Saints Eve. It's a celebration observed in several countries on the 31st of October, the eve of the Western Christian feast of All Hallows Day, also known as All Saints Day, which is why I thought it would be appropriate to play the Saints Go Marching In. It begins the three-day observance of All Hallowtide, and I had never heard that phrase before, the time in the liturgical year dedicated to the remembering of the dead, including saints, which are also known as hallows, martyrs, and all the faithful departed. It's widely believed that many Halloween traditions originated from ancient Celtic harvest festivals, particularly the Gaelic festival Samhain. I'm glad that you put on this little insert the word Samhain, because it doesn't look like it's pronounced that way. It's spelled S-A-M-H-A-I-N. And for many years, I mispronounced it Samhain, but it is actually in Celtic pronounced Samhain. Such festivals may have had pagan roots. It's also widely believed that Samhain itself was Christianized as Halloween or All Hallows Eve by the early church. Some believe, however, that Halloween began solely as a Christian holiday, separate from ancient festivals like Samhain. Halloween activities include trick-or-treating, or the related guising and souling. I'll be talking about those later. Guising is dressing up in costume and going door-to-door, asking for food or money. Souling is going door-to-door, asking for a soul cake, baked especially for All Saints and All Souls Day. In return for the cake, the soulers would promise to pray for the dead souls in the donor's family. Other traditions include attending Halloween costume parties, carving pumpkins into jack-o'-lanterns, lighting bonfires, apple bobbing, divination games, playing pranks, visiting haunted attractions, telling scary stories, listening to scary music, and watching horror films. In many parts of the world, the Christian religion observances of All Hallows Eve, including attending church services and lighting candles on the graves of the dead, remain popular. Although elsewhere it is a more commercial and secular celebration, as it is in this country primarily. Some Christians historically abstained from meat on All Hallows Eve. I don't think I ever did that. A tradition reflected in the eating of certain vegetarian foods on this vigil day, including apples, potato pancakes, and the aforementioned soul cakes. The word Halloween or Halloween, that's a slight distinction with an apostrophe, dates to about 1745 and is of Christian origin. The word Halloween means Saints' Evening. It comes from the Scottish term for All Hallows' Eve, the evening before All Hallows' Day. In Scots, the word Eve is even, and this is contracted to Ian or Een. Over time, All Hallows' Even evolved into Halloween. While some folklorists have detected the origins of Halloween in the Roman feast of Pomona, the goddess of fruits and seeds, or in the festival of the dead, called Parentalia, it is more typically linked to the Celtic festival of Samhain, as we said before, which comes from the Old Irish for summer's end. Samhain was the first and most important of the four quarter days in the medieval Gaelic calendar, and was celebrated on October 31st to November 1st, because they always began their days like the Jewish people do and the Islamic people on the sundown rather than sunrise. And that was celebrated in Ireland, Scotland, and the Isle of Man. A kindred festival was held at the same time of year by the Brittonic Celts called Calan Gaeaf, a name meaning the first day of winter. For the Celts, the day ended and began at sunset, as I just explained. But their festival actually began on the evening before the 7th of November, which was the actual quarter point of the year. The half point between the equinox and the solstice. Samhain, or Calendar, marked the end of the harvest season and beginning of winter, or the darker half of the year. Like Beltane, also known as Calendar May, it was seen as a liminal time when the boundary between this world and the other world thinned. This meant the spirits or fairies, or Ís-Sí in Gaelic, and that's another one that's spelled nothing like it sounds, A-O-S-S-I. Is A-O-S, Ís-Sí. Yeah. So this meant that the spirits or fairies could more easily come into this world and were particularly active. The Ís-Sí were both respected and feared. When individuals often invoking the protection of God when approaching their dwellings. At Samhain, it was believed that the Ís-Sí needed to be propitiated to ensure that the people and their livestock survived the winter. Offerings of food and drink or portions of the crops were left outside for the Ís-Sí. The souls of the dead were also said to revisit their homes seeking hospitality. Places were set at the dinner table and by the fire to welcome them. Sort of the way Jewish people set a place at the table for Elijah at Passover. The belief that the souls of the dead return home on one night of the year and must be appeased seems to have ancient origins and is found in many cultures throughout the world. In 19th century Ireland, candles would be lit and prayers formally offered for the souls of the dead. After this, the eating, drinking, and gaming would begin. That sounds typically Irish to me. First candles and prayers, then drinking and eating, yes, like an Irish wake or wedding. Throughout Ireland and Britain, the household festivities included rituals and games intended to foretell one's future, especially regarding death and marriage. I thought it was interesting that they wanted to know about their death, but then I kind of realized that people's lifespan was much shorter then. And, you know, the idea that one might die within the year, you know, if you're in your 30s or 40s, was probably not that far-fetched. Apples and nuts were often used in these divination rituals. They included apple bobbing, nut roasting, mirror gazing, scrying by pouring molten lead or egg whites into water, dream interpretation, and others. Special bonfires were lit, and there were rituals involving them. Their flames, smoke, and ashes were deemed to have protective and cleansing powers and were also used for divination. In some places, torches lit from the bonfire were carried sunwise around the homes and fields to protect them. It is suggested that the fires were a kind of imitative or sympathetic magic. They mimicked the sun, helping the powers of growth and holding back the decay and darkness of winter. In Wales, bonfires were lit to prevent the souls of the dead from falling to earth. I thought that was pretty mean. Later, these bonfires served to keep away the devil. From at least the 16th century, the festival of All Hallows' Eve included mumming and guising in Ireland, Scotland, and the Isle of Man and Wales. This involved people going house to house in costume or in disguise, i.e. guising, usually reciting verses or songs in exchange for food. Mumming is actually the performance of a short play, usually with a moralistic tone. It may have originally been a tradition whereby people impersonated the Ís-Sí, or the souls of the dead, and received offerings on their behalf. Impersonating these beings or wearing a disguise was also believed to protect oneself from them. It suggested that the mummers and guisers personify the old spirits of the winter who demanded reward in exchange for good fortune. You might remember that Shakespeare refers to players in a play as mummers. In parts of Southern Ireland, The guises included a hobby horse, a man dressed as a white mare who led youths house to house reciting verses, some of which had pagan overtones. In exchange for food, if the household donated food, it could expect good fortune. Not doing so would bring misfortune. This is like trick or treat without the threat, or with an implied threat. In Scotland, youths went house to house with masked, painted, or blackened faces, often threatening to do mischief if they were not welcomed. In the late 19th and early 20th century, young people in Glamorgan and Orkney cross-dressed, an early expression of gender diffusion, perhaps? I found that kind of fascinating. From at least the 18th century, imitating malignant spirits led to playing pranks in Ireland and the Scottish Highlands. Wearing costumes and playing pranks at Halloween spread to England in the 20th century. Traditionally, pranksters used hollowed-out turnips or large beets, often carved with grotesque faces, as lanterns. The lanterns were said to represent the spirits, or were used to ward off evil spirits. They were common in parts of Ireland and the Scottish Highlands in the 19th century. In the 20th century, they spread to other parts of England and became known as jack-o'-lanterns. Jack-o'-lanterns are traditionally carried by guises on All Hallows' Eve in order to frighten evil spirits. There is a popular Irish Christian folktale associated with the jack-o'-lantern, which in folklore is said to represent a soul who has been denied entry into both heaven and hell. It's in the genre of the Jack Tales, if you're familiar, if you're a storyteller. There are many, many Jack Tales. En route home after a night's drinking, Jack encounters the devil and tricks him into climbing a tree. A quick-thinking Jack etches the sign of the cross into the bark, thus trapping the devil. Jack strikes a bargain with the trapped Satan and says, if I release you, you can never claim my soul. After a life of sin, drink, and mendacity, Jack is refused entry to heaven when he dies, of course. Keeping his promise, however, the devil refuses to let Jack into hell and throws a live coal straight from the fires of hell at him. It was a cold night, so Jack places the coal in a hollowed-out turnip to stop it from going out. Since that time, Jack and his lantern have been roaming, looking for a place to rest. Yeah. I think Washington Irving picked up that tale in the story of Ichabod Crane.
Yeah.
Here is another explanation for the origin of wearing masks and costumes on All Hallows' Eve. It was traditionally believed that the souls of the departed wandered the earth until All Saints' Day, and All Hallows' Eve provided one last chance for the dead to gain vengeance on their enemies before moving to the next world. Isn't that an interesting thought? Yes. In order to avoid being recognized by any soul that might be seeking such vengeance, people would don masks or costumes to disguise their identities. It has been suggested that the carved jack-o'-lantern, a popular symbol of Halloween, originally represented the souls of the dead. On Halloween in medieval Europe, fires served a dual purpose, being lit to guide returning souls to the homes of their families, as well as to deflect demons from haunting sincere Christian folk. Households in Austria, England, and Ireland often had candles burning in every room to guide the souls back to visit their earthly homes. Kind of like we put candles in every window at Christmas time to guide Jesus or the angels to our homes. These were known as soul lights. Many Christians in mainland Europe, especially in France, believe that once a year on Halloween, the dead of the churchyards rose for one wild, hilarious carnival known as the Danse Macabre, which has often been depicted in church decoration and in music. This Danse Macabre was enacted at village pageants and at court masquerade balls, with people dressing up as corpses with various strata of society, and may have been the origin of modern-day Halloween costume parties. In Ireland and Scotland, the turnip has traditionally been carved into Halloween, during Halloween. But immigrants to North America use a native pumpkin, which is both softer and much larger, making it easier to carve than a turnip. Have you ever tried to carve a turnip? They are really hard. The American tradition of carving pumpkins is recorded first in 1837. It was originally associated with harvest time in general, not becoming specifically associated with Halloween until the mid to late 19th century. The modern imagery of Halloween comes from many sources, including Christian eschatology, the concern with death, judgment, and final destiny of the soul, national customs, works of Gothic and horror literature, such as the novels Frankenstein and Dracula, and classic horror films, such as Frankenstein and the Mummy. Imagery of the skull, a reference to Golgotha in the Christian tradition, serves as a reminder of death and the transitory quality of human life. Elements of the autumn season, such as pumpkins, corn husks, and scarecrows, are also prevalent. Homes are often decorated with these types of symbols around Halloween. Halloween imagery includes themes of death, evil, and mythical monsters. Black, orange, and sometimes purple are Halloween's traditional colors. Mumming, practiced in early times in Germany, Scandinavia, and other parts of Europe, involved masked persons in fancy dress who paraded the streets and entered houses to dance or play dice in silence. I thought that was an odd thing to do, to play dice in silence. Today, trick-or-treating is practiced in those countries. In England, from the medieval period up until the 1930s, people practiced the Christian custom of souling on Halloween, which involved groups of soulers, both Protestant and Catholic, going from parish to parish begging the rich for soul cakes in exchange for praying for the souls of the givers and their friends. In the Philippines, the practice of souling is called Pangangalawa and is practiced on All Hallows' Eve among children in rural areas. Amazing that, customs like that span the globe. People drape themselves in white cloths to represent souls and then visit houses where they sing in return for prayers and sweets. In Scotland and Ireland, guising, children disguised in costume going from door to door for food or coins, is a traditional Halloween custom and is recorded in Scotland at Halloween in 1895, where masqueraders in disguise carrying lanterns made out of scooped out turnips visit homes to be rewarded with cakes, fruit, and money. The practice of guising in Halloween in North America was first recorded in 1911 when a newspaper in Kingston, Ontario, Canada reported children going guising around the neighborhood. I found this interesting. One writer described guising as ritualized begging. All Halloween customs in the United States are borrowed directly or adapted from those of other countries. The thousands of Halloween postcards produced between the turn of the century and the 1920s commonly show children, but not trick-or-treating. Trick-or-treating does not seem to have become a widespread practice until the 1930s, when the first U.S. appearance of the term in 1934, and the first use in a national publication occurring in 1939. A popular variant of trick-or-treating, known as trunk-or-treating, or Halloween tailgating, occurs when children are offered treats from the trunks of cars parked in a church parking lot. You're familiar with that one. Or sometimes a school parking lot. In a trunk-or-treat event, the trunk of each automobile is decorated with a certain theme, such as those of children's literature, movies, scripture, and job roles. Trunk-or-treating has grown in popularity due to its perception as being more safe than going door-to-door, as well as the fact that it solves the rural conundrum in which homes are built a half mile apart. I was unaware of this practice until doing this research for this talk, but saw in our recent travels in Florida several churches advertising trunk-or-treating events. So they're obviously still popular. Dressing up in costumes and going guising was prevalent in Scotland and Ireland at Halloween by the late 19th century. A Scottish term, The tradition is called guising because of the disguises or costumes worn by the children. In Ireland, the masks are known as false faces. I kind of thought that was interesting. Trick or Treat for UNICEF is a fundraising program to support UNICEF. I remember doing that as a child. A United Nations program that provides humanitarian aid to children in developing countries. Started as a local event in Northeast Philadelphia neighborhood in 1950 and expanded nationally in 1952. The program involves the distribution of small boxes by schools on modern times, corporate sponsors like Hallmark, at their licensed stores, to trick-or-treaters in which they can solicit small change donations from the houses they visit. Now, I was amazed at this next statement. It is estimated that children have collected more than $118 million for UNICEF since its inception. Yeah. Now, speaking of amazing expenditures of money, here's another one, interesting one. Pet costumes. We must not forget about costumes for pets. I'm sure you've seen kids walking up to your door trick-or-treating who have pets dressed just as elaborately as they are. According to a 2018 report from the National Retail Federation, 30 million Americans will spend an estimated $480 million on Halloween costumes for their pets in 2018. This is up from an estimated only $200 million in 2010. Only in America.
Yeah, I've been in the wrong business.
Yeah, really.
And you won't come the week.
Yeah.
I always say when we talk about, you know, who to sell our pulse electromagnetic frequency devices to, I say pet owners, and you know, especially horse owners. I mean, they will spend a fortune on their pets. I know because I've spent a fortune on my pets, and I don't have that much money. There are several games traditionally associated with Halloween. Some of these games originated as divination rituals or ways of foretelling one's future, especially regarding death, marriage, and children. During the Middle Ages, these rituals were done by a rare few in rural communities, as they were considered to be deadly serious. In recent centuries, these divination games have been a common feature of the household festivities in Ireland and Britain. They often involve apples and hazelnuts. In Celtic mythology, apples were strongly associated with the other world and immortality. I didn't know that. But I'm thinking that the apple in Snow White has some connection there. While hazelnuts were associated with divine wisdom. See, and you're always yelling at me about drinking hazelnut coffee. It gives divine wisdom. Some also suggest that they derive from Roman practices in celebration of Pomona, the Roman goddess of fruitful abundance, especially orchard fruits, from which her name derives. In the Romance languages, palm is the word for apple. The following activities were a common feature of Halloween in Ireland and Britain during the 17th to the 20th centuries. Some have become more widespread and continue to be popular today. One common game is apple bobbing. I'm sure most of us have done that. Or dunking, in which apples float in a tub or a large basin of water, and the participants must use only their teeth to remove the apple. Another common game involves hanging up molasses or syrup-coated scones. Obviously, this is a Scottish tradition. These must be eaten without using hands, while they remain attached to the string, an activity that inevitably leads to a sticky face. Another once popular game involves hanging a small wooden rod from the ceiling at head height with a lit candle on one end and an apple hanging from the other. The rod is spun around and everyone takes turns to try to catch the apple with their teeth. That sounds dangerous.
Without being burned up.
Without being burned, yes. Several of the traditional activities from Ireland and Britain involve foretelling one's future and one's future partner or spouse. An apple would be peeled in one long strip, then the peel tossed over the shoulder. The peel is believed to land in the shape of the first letter of the future spouse's name. Another custom was two hazelnuts would be roasted near a fire, one named for the person roasting them and the other for the person they desire. If the nuts jump away from the heat, it's a bad sign. But if the nuts roast quietly together, it foretells a good match. A salty oatmeal flatbread would be baked. The person would eat it in three bites, very ritualistic, and go to bed in silence without anything to drink. This is said to result in a dream in which the future spouse offers them a drink to quench their thirst. Kind of like being awakened by the prince's kiss, right? Unmarried women were told that if they sat in a darkened room and gazed into a mirror on Halloween night, you'll find this one familiar, the face of their future husband would appear in the mirror. However, if they were destined to die before marriage, a skull would appear. The custom was widespread enough to be commemorated on greeting cards from the late 19th century and early 20th century. In Ireland and Scotland, items would be hidden in food, usually a cake or a mashed potato dish, and portions of it served out at random. A person's future would be foretold by the item they happened to find. For example, a ring meant marriage, a coin meant wealth. Up until the 19th century, the Halloween bonfires were also used for divination in parts of Scotland, Wales, and Brittany. When the fires died down, a ring of stones would be laid in the ashes, one for each person. In the morning, if any stone was mislaid, it was said that the person it represented would not live out the year. Yeah, there's a lot of emphasis on dying and Halloween fortune telling. Telling ghost stories and watching horror films are also common fixtures of Halloween parties. Haunted houses, corn mazes, and hay rides are also common forms of amusement on Halloween. On Halloween or All Hallows Eve in Poland, you can fact check me on this, believers were once taught to pray out loud as they walked through the forest in order that the souls of the dead might find comfort. In Spain, Christian priests in tiny villages tolled their church bells in order to remind their congregants to remember the dead on All Hallows Eve. In Ireland and among immigrants in Canada, a custom includes the Christian practice of abstinence, keeping All Hallows Eve as a meat-free day, and serving pancakes or calconan, or mashed potatoes with kale or cabbage, instead. In Mexico, children make an altar to invite the return of the spirits of dead children, or angelitos. Other Protestant Christians also celebrate All Hallows Eve as Reformation Day. This was news to me. A day to remember the Protestant Reformation, alongside All Hallows Eve or independently from it. This is because Martin Luther is said to have nailed his 95 Theses to All Saints Church in Wittenberg on All Hallows Eve. I did not remember that it was on All Hallows Eve. Often harvest festivals or Reformation festivals are held on All Hallows Eve, in which children dress up as Bible characters or reformers, in addition to distributing candy to children who are trick-or-treating on Halloween. Many Christians also provide gospel tracts to them. One organization, the American Tract Society, stated that around 3 million gospel tracts are ordered from them alone for Halloween celebrations. Others order Halloween-themed scripture candy to pass out to children on this day. In summary, All Hallows Eve is celebrated in many countries around the world, not just English-speaking ones. The most common activities are dressing up in costume and begging for food or money. There used to be a quid pro quo for praying for the souls of lost family members in return for the food or money. In recent times, the threat of a prank has replaced the promise of prayer. I guess that's an example of the secularization of Halloween or All Hallows Eve. Happy Halloween, everyone.
Yes. Hey, can I share one if you don't mind?
Oh, please.
Okay,
I was going to ask if anybody had any other unusual practices for Halloween.
Well, in the seminary, they told me that I can still remember, it kind of combines a lot of this stuff. They said because the veil becomes so thin during this time of the year that the saints and the souls of the departed will come. But in order to prepare the way for them, that they would dress up as ghouls and goblins and stuff like that and run around in order to scare away all the evil spirits, mm-hmm. to kind of clear the path so for the souls and the saints.
God, tell them crap, you believe it. Yeah.
So that was the priest that dressed up as
ghouls? Just people.
People.
People would just to scare away the evil spirits so that the souls could come safely.
Mm-hmm. Any other fun practices on Halloween?
Growing up in Maine, it was always a two-night thing. The first night was what they called Mischief Night. Uh-huh. There wasn't any trick-or-treating, but there was a lot of tricks being done. And uh-huh. I remember we used to do things like notch wooden spools with string around and go up to people's windows, and they'd go rat-a-tat, big noise.
Uh-huh.
Things. And then the next night was the costume thing and going trick-or-treating door to door. But mm-hmm. I don't know where Mischief Night came.
It's Scottish in origin. I didn't put that in, but it's I did notice that in my research.
At home, the first night was trick-or-treat night. And the next night was Halloween night. You just go do tricks.
So you reverse it. Yeah. A couple of things my father used to tell me about Halloween when he was growing up, which I didn't see mentioned in the reports I read, were tipping cows and outhouses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And my father told me a story. He swore it was true that they tipped over an outhouse when somebody was in it. He didn't realize that there was somebody
I'm there. Sure that could happen.
They did that at our wedding. During the reception, they took the car we were supposed to leave in and they turned it 90 degrees in the garage and you couldn't get out.
Must have been a smart car or something. Any other Halloween traditions? Thank you very much.
That was really interesting.
Thank you. Okay.